Welcome to the Coffee and Code podcast, where we bridge the gap between technology and people through each informative episode. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, technologist, two-time TEDx speaker, and CEO of Coffee and Consult. On this show, you'll hear exclusive interviews with experts, innovators, creatives, and business owners in the tech space and beyond. Whether you're a novice or a tech enthusiast, my goal is to excite, inform, and empower you to understand how the rapidly evolving world of technology impacts your daily life. Let's dive into today's episode.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Code, where we demystify emerging technologies by talking to the leading innovators in the field who are doing it. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, and I have a very special guest on the show with us today, Jason Marsh. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here. So nice to be with you, Ashley.
I'm glad you're here. Now, Jason, you're the founder and CEO of Flow Immersive, AR data visualization with AI on smart glasses, which is very cool. Let's dive into it. Tell us more about yourself, Jason, and tell us more about Flow Immersive.
Sure. A brief background for me. I've been coding for quite a long time, over 50 years. I started at Apple Computer in 1991, working on speech recognition. And I am been working on Flow Immersive. We incorporated 9.5 years ago. So we've been around for quite a while in the VR space. I'm going to, for those who are seeing this visually, I'm going to share my screen and just share a little video. But I'll describe what we're doing as the video goes by. So this particular video shows me picking up a pair of smart glasses. This is actually the X-Real smart glasses and seeing a set of data. In this case, it is financial data on a three-dimensional chart, maybe a dozen different stocks down the depth axis. And you can see these beautiful lines and area charts beneath each stock. Interact with an AI. You just click a button, speak out loud what you would like the AI to do for you. And it usually writes Python code to reprocess the data set and throw it back into 3D space. You can also ask it something like, why did Boeing do poorly this year or the last 2 years? And it'll answer those questions from its corpus of knowledge. It is a full agent so that you can ask it very long and complicated questions. Not just whether you're doing a 10-day moving average, but also something like, show me the changes since the inauguration. And it'll go through a number of steps to rebalance the data, renormalize the data based on the inauguration date. It also does like force directed graphs. There's just lots of times when you want to see your data across maps in interesting ways. So I'm showing the view of the United States vertical. So you can see the upside, the front and the back. And this is actually CMS data, Medicare, Medicaid data. And you can see whether reimbursements had gone up or down based on whether the lines are coming up from the map on one side or going through the backside of the map. So some of our key customers are public policy organizations, financial services, and consultancies. So we do a fair amount of work for most of the large consultancies, KPMG, PwC, Deloitte, Forvis Mazars, et cetera. And then we have done some really exciting work for the World Bank and for the UN. In fact, the UN General Assembly, 2 years in a row, had Flow as part of their presentations. For that, it's a flat screen, right? They're just showing on a flat screen, but it still gives you a sense of the 3D and a sense of the drama of the data. And that is kind of core to our whole picture, because overall, we've got one goal, which is to give you the best possible conversation you can imagine around your data. And for us, we think that that should mean it's floating above the conference room table in the middle of the meeting in a multi-user environment. Everybody can interact with their laser pointers or virtual laser pointers. And if someone is remote, then they come in as an avatar. So wow. That's a big picture overview.
Amazing. I love that. I mean, I feel like the best specific example that you gave there is at the UN. Like, what better way to leverage data? Data is like a universal language and we can all see it and be able to extrapolate information. Now, what was the original aha moment that made you realize that data needed to be experienced and not just seen on two-dimensional slides?
So I first, was inspired to start the company by thinking about science fiction and specifically Iron Man. This is the part of Iron Man where first Iron Man where Tony Stark is actually creating a new element. He's flicking atoms and elements with his hands in an augmented reality environment. He asks Jarvis to, manipulate for him, and he's just sees, you get that sense of awe and wonder, but also that sense of mastery and control, that Tony has absolute control over that whole environment. And that seemed very exciting and doable and powerful. So really what that represents is using these technologies to help us understand symbolic information. If you think about pretty much everything else, particularly in VR, is around reproducing the real world, training examples in enterprise, or creating fantasy worlds in games, whatever. It's creating world experiences instead of experiencing ideas themselves. So focus on those ideas themselves. And then the first time I really saw the vision come to life was in a Gear VR. And we had thrown life expectancy data across the space in each country, 200 years of life expectancy data in each country. And you can see this just arc of humanity's success. The last 100 years, life expectancy has gone up for every country in the world. But then you could also see humanity's greatest failures. You could see the chasm for the Spanish flu in 1918, all of this disruption in World War II. You could see this big dropout for the earthquake in Haiti in 2010, and this absolutely astonishing drop in Rwanda in 1994 for the genocide. So in one view, in one glance, you're seeing humanity's greatest success and some of their most, heinous failures. And you can drill in immediately, filter to each country, et cetera. Now we've added an AI, so you can actually ask it things like, show me the AIDS crisis in sub-Saharan Africa. And it'll filter the right set of years and filter the right set of countries. And you can see this long, slow curve on all those five or six countries in sub-Saharan Africa in the data set anyway, that starting around 1990 through 2010, that long, slow curve down and then back up. That's what slow-moving pandemic looks like. So it was so inspiring. And then immediately put it in with other people and having those good conversations. Like, okay, there's something here.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's important that we find those origin moments, those aha moments that led us to what is created now. I mean, I feel like your 50 years of coding and your experience of creativity all has come together in this Flow Immersive experience. Now, how does Flow Immersive position itself as replacing slide decks with 3D data stories? And do you think PowerPoint will ever actually die?
So we are initially thought that we were going to do the PowerPoint of VR.
Okay.
But it turned out that the data visualization resonated much more with our audience, with our customers. And that was a big enough and challenging enough area just to focus on that. And so we see what we're doing as replacing the, financial and data slides in the deck, not the whole deck. Certainly today. I think if we're comfortable wearing glasses and if augmented reality glasses is the norm, then sure, the rest of the deck should be floating there too. Showing flat graphics in XR is just not that meaningful. Mm-hmm. What's really meaningful is seeing the amount of detail that you can see with your binaural vision, not binaural, but, by your stereo vision and binaural audio, but that's a different thing. With your stereo, that extra detail is where you can see the risk in the data. Very often in PowerPoint, we over-summarize everything to a bunch of boring bar charts, and those boring bar charts become hide the fact that you had two important sales in the last week of the quarter. And without those, your quarter would have been a disaster, but that risk has disappeared because you've divided into a single
nuance.
Bar. Nuance, exactly. So that's where XR is really powerful, and that's enough. And I would actually submit that that's the part that, most of these PowerPoint slides are completely useless and flush out of people's brains anyway. But this is the part where it's fully interactive and everyone's engaged and no one's just sitting back watching. And the executives in the room can ask the right questions and drill in themselves. And that's a shared mental modeling process that PowerPoint will never do. However, we are just focused on the data piece of it.
I like that. And so on that note, how do you balance making visualization stunning and immersive without overwhelming the human brain?
Well, it's actually the other way around.
Okay.
Okay. So our human brains are built and learned and constructed in order to understand the world in 3D. So our brains are 3D already. And we have forgotten this ever since we started, I don't know, cave walls or writing on papyrus or something. We've forgotten that, I mean, we put so much of our world onto flat screens, but we've forgotten that the right way to build mental models is 3D. In fact, if you go to what's these organizations that give tests to high schoolers in order for them to figure out what they might be good at and do in for a career, the students that do really well at putting together 3D puzzles, they have mapped that to be good programmers, because programmers keep in mind so much information simultaneously.
Yeah.
And it's actually a 3D, our brain actually puts that in a 3D world.
Wow.
So when we activate our hippocampus, which gives us our spatial awareness, we get into that spatial part of our brain. We're forming long-term memories, the same way a mouse remembers its tunnels through your house in order to find food. We're activating your full visual cortex, which is much broader than just your language centers, which is very helpful. We're giving you that sense of mastery and control because it's so interactive and drillable. And then we're giving you so much more ability to see the detail because you're not limited to the flat screen. You actually, your, you know, eyes can constantly jump between different areas of depth. You put all that together and it's a magical communication device. And you end up with sometimes the things can be complex, but that complexity becomes maybe the starting point. You get a good filter and real-time legends you can click on and real-time ways that you can filter down to compare just A and B instead of comparing 10 things at once. That's how you you solve for complexity and communicate complexity in a way that's actually built the way our brains are meant to understand the world.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so with Flow's speak with your data feature, which I love, and I feel like that really does set you apart, it lets people ask questions in plain language. So shifting to AI, what's the biggest technical challenge that you and your team have experienced when making AI answer accurately inside an AR data visualization?
Well, there is a lot of puzzle pieces to make that work. Absolutely.
I'm sure.
At first, you know, just getting it to respond. So first, with our AI, we speak to it and it responds by manipulating the data, but also in a window. So, you know, and people ask us very often, why don't we have the AI respond verbally? In a multi-user human environment, we're not comfortable having an AI in that space. And if we were comfortable with it, it would have to respond with incredibly low latency at just the right level of context or, you know, length, succinctness, whatever. Humans can start an explanation, see that people are looking away and shorten it right away. AIs haven't figured all of that out yet. Until we solve a whole bunch of human factors, which are beyond the scope of our company, around having an AI, embodied AI, or some sort of even just verbal AI in a meeting, it doesn't make as much sense. So instead, we have the text come back and then everybody can see the text. They can glance at it. They can continue to have the conversation without all of those human factors. Thing that was, of course, very important was to create an agent because it can go out and get data off the internet. It can process the data. It can come back, maybe see that something didn't work in its first attempt at writing code or whatever, correct itself, go through again. Then it can upload the data back to the client, display it in the client. Maybe update which columns are on the height axis. You ask it to do even a 26-day moving average. You now have a new column, and that column needs to be applied to the height axis to see it actually appear. So by the time you go through all of those steps, or if you had to go through all of those steps one at a time as a human, it feels incredibly onerous. And that's, of course, where we started, and we discovered right away. When agents started to become a thing, it was like, this is really where we can solve for that. And then the last thing is, I still think that one of the most challenging things, and I have not seen anyone else do this, and I call it multi-user AI. So one person is interacting with the AI, everybody in the meeting simultaneously without much latency has to see the results, get the new data sets, have all the visualizations updated. They can then still continue to click and interact with them. And while we are limited to only one person interacting with the AI at once for now, because that gets really crazy to have two people giving an AI conflicting instructions at the same time. But even with only the host being the AI interaction person, doing a multi-user AI is still a pretty complex technical challenge, and I haven't seen anyone else attempt it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Things are rapidly accelerating at a rate that is just wild for me to comprehend. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about data visualization is that it's notorious for bias. So how does Flow help prevent people from just seeing what they want to see instead of what's actually true?
Well, the biggest way that you can bias your data is to pre-filter it before you expose it to the end audience. Mm. And that pre-filtering goes back to our earlier conversation, which is to oversimplify it. So if you say, hey, I'm going to draw the lines, instead of, so very often in Flow, we'll show every day, you know, daily data, you know, temperature, ocean temperature data or stock data. We'll see just every single granular bit of data. And then you can ask it, show me the third quarter. You can ask it, summarize it in this way or filter it with this analysis or filter it to just these couple of stocks or however you want to do it. You have, because you have the raw data that you're working with at the start, that room of people has the mastery and control, is my little phrase again, to filter it the way they want. It's because it's not pre-filtered, you're getting much closer to.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. And that's amazing. And that kind of leads into my next question here with what kind of emerging technologies excites you the most for Flow's future? Would it be spatial computing, more powerful AI agents, or something that we aren't even talking about yet?
Well, you framed the conversation from the start around smart glasses.
Yes.
Which I'm holding up if you can't see.
They're beautiful.
I'm holding an X-Reel pair. They are tethered to a phone. So they're, you know, they're not our ultimate vision of a tiny, beautiful pair of glasses that we can wear all day yet. But the images are stunning. They're bright, they're clear, they're crisp. They're a higher pixel per degree than even the Apple Vision Pro. So they are really crisp in space and they're optical see-through. So you can still see the world and still interact with the other people in the room. So what we're very, very excited about the augmented reality universe. We frankly didn't do that well on VR headsets. Very hard to get, particularly executives or C-suite people, to walk into a conference room and want to put on a headset. Especially women in that environment, their hair is done, they've got makeup, et cetera. There's so many friction points with a bigger headset and one that has so much contact with your face. And one, even with pass-through, still don't have, especially before you put it on, you don't have a sense of your confidence and safety in the room. It's true for women, and it's also true for C-suite folks who don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to look weird, and people are pushing on them in a way that I hear is similar to the way people push on women, and therefore they have this more standoffish approach to how they hold themselves in the world. A VR headset is a problem. So,
and there's research that supports that for everyone listening.
Yes. So having a true optical see-through and just glasses. And we are so comfortable with glasses. Mm-hmm. We've worn glasses for at least 100 years, about 150 years, and they're very intimate with our faces. I mean, they're within an inch of our eyes and we're comfortable with that. So this is the glasses and the form factor is the big change and absolutely revolutionizing our business right now. The response we've had the last 3 months that we've announced and are showing this is just like it's a different company. And sorry, VR people, I don't even want to use the word VR anymore. I've taken it almost entirely off of our website. For our use case, it's all about glasses and augmented reality, but specifically the glasses form factor. I don't think that in a conference room, in an everyday conference room environment, a corporate environment, that the headsets are going to do what we need them to do and get the adoption we need. But I think glasses will. I'm sure glasses will.
I couldn't agree more with you because, I mean, I've been in the VR world since like 2018, not as long as you. And I've always seen that friction, that barrier to entry, whether it be I don't know how to use it or I'm not techie enough or it's going to mess up my hair, what you name it. The glasses present a lower barrier to entry, but more so the collaboration aspect I think is so key. Being able to put on glasses, but collaboratively discuss data together. And I want people to understand that we are just not technically advanced enough to have untethered glasses, just one due to the data sets and the power. So just we're not there yet. But I love that the X-Reel glasses, they're very comfortable on your face. They don't look huge. They look professional. And it seems like a seamless item to pick up off of a conference table and just start getting into your data.
Exactly. We had a demonstration for Morgan Stanley 2 weeks ago, and we walked in with five pairs of glasses, and they're set to phones. The phone becomes a controller, just a 3-DOF controller, but enough. Okay. It gives you your laser pointer.
Nice.
We walked in, put a QR code on the middle of the table, and we've got it set so that our app auto launches. So within the first 2 minutes, I had some helpers, but everybody could grab a pair of glasses, point them, take, not even wear them, just hold them near the QR code.
Okay.
See on the phone that they were, that everything was set, and hand them to people. There's no bare border thing. There's no sharing mode like on an Apple Vision Pro. We literally launch it, press one button, which says scan QR code, hold it there. Usually it catches it within about 2 seconds and hand it to people. Within 2 minutes, we had the first five people in the headset. We did a full round of demos, and that frictionless experience, I've been trying to get there for a year. I actually have to say, just on a personal note, this was like the pinnacle of my career to date. It's the first time we've had that high level an audience experiencing flow, my vision, the way I wanted it to happen. Everybody in the, five people simultaneously in seeing the same thing, co-located, locked into the same spot in the room, on the table, right? So people are walking around it, and everybody's laser pointers are coming out of their hands, their physical hands, right? And then talking to the AI and having it spin the data and manipulate it as any way I wanted to. That's the Iron Man moment, that mastery and control that I've wanted for all these years. And it was very exciting to get to that.
You're making me tear up, Jason, because I'm so happy for you. And I know how much work that takes to get there. And the fact that you were able to be present in that moment and see it all come together, that's just priceless. So I'm celebrating that for you, because people listening do not know how difficult what you accomplished is.
It's been 9 years, 40 plus engineering man years
Wow.
to do this. I've got a good, great team of engineers. Yeah. Yeah. It's been hard. And to stay alive in this industry, we've never taken VC money. So. Mm. How do you be scrappy enough to make that work for all this time? But also to see the responses. The most meaningful response isn't that this is cool or this is great. It's like, I could use this tomorrow. That's what I want to hear. And that's what I was hearing from the room.
Incredible. I love that. So on the same note, this is really cool. And I love the concept of it. But is cool going to be meaningful in the long run, long term? What are your thoughts?
Sure. A lot of people think the word cool has to do with a sense of newness and novelty, and that it will wear off. And so I want you to not think about flow to answer this question, because I'm going to ask you the next question, which is, give me some words, just single words that describe the word flow. What is flow? Not the word flow. Cool. What does cool mean to you, Ashley? What does it mean for something to be cool?
Grand Theft Auto Vice City. Neon lights, disco balls, pineapples, celebration, confetti. That's cool.
So you're catching a lot of the excitement.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And the energy around it. I would submit to you that there is another definition, which I have been referring to, which is mastery and control. So let me show you this. So a skateboarder first brainstormed this with me, where a skateboard trick is cool, but it's not flashy. It actually doesn't have pineapples or flashing lights. The skate artist has this control over their gravity, over their board, over their body. And even a cool person has that same sense of who they are in the world. It's a sense of control and mastery and comfort with themselves and their authenticity. So when people say that our product is cool, I very often say it's cool not because of novelty, but because of the mastery and control. All the way back to Iron Man flicking the atoms, we go, oh, that's cool, because he can do exactly what he wants efficiently, beautifully, elegantly, smoothly. That's how I define cool. And that doesn't just go away because you've seen it 100 times.
You just blew my mind, Jason, with that. I want to be cool. Now I have
Me
a new
too.
Definition.
I got to keep working on it. Yeah.
Wow. I love that. I love that sense of like master and control, that it's so on the nose. But I love that flow puts you in that control. And if you understand how to navigate your environment, then the world is your oyster.
I hope so. That's the goal. Even the name flow comes from that. Mm. You have all the tools and all the skills to accomplish a difficult task when you're in flow. Flow is not just sitting back and looking at a movie. It's actively engaged in something that's actually difficult, but you've got just what you need. And if we can help people have that feeling with the data that they use to run their businesses and run their lives. That is amazing.
So I'm curious, Jason, if Flow succeeds in its mission, what will the boardroom of the future look like?
I think Flow should be floating over every conference room table.
Yeah.
I also think that there are other applications besides enterprise. We're doing some work with Caitlin Krause on
yes.
a digital wellness thing where we use data from your smartwatch mm-hmm. to see your own data, your own health data and sleep, et cetera, and use that along with a wellness, you know, even more meditation practice to bring that same feeling to your own experience. And again, better ways for you to find your own authenticity and understand yourself in the world.
I love that because data tells a story and we produce so much data. We're consumers, but we're also producers. And I think we forget that we're producers and we lean too much into the consumers. And that's something that we talked about. And I'm glad that everyone's listening because everyone's listening. This is perfect that Caitlin's episode will drop before Jason. So please do listen to it if you're listening now. There's some connectivity here and beautiful overlap. And like you said, there's use cases beyond enterprise, which I think there's so much to explore there. But the fact that you've built something that is discipline agnostic, I think is great. And I applaud you for having the foresight to think that far into the future. You're definitely, you were ahead of your time whenever you created this.
Being ahead of a market is a challenging thing to do. And a lot of VR folks have felt that pain.
Yeah, every time I go to AWE, I feel it and hear it. But, you know, it's a wonderful community to be a part of because we iterate, learn, grow, continue.
Absolutely.
So, Jason, what advice would you give to leaders who are still stuck in that spreadsheet culture and are hesitant to embrace immersive data?
Well, it is really good to experience it, you know, in a pair of glasses. But there are challenges in enterprise. Data security is one. If this is really vital data to your organization, then we need to do, you know, complete security review. So we've done that. Chances are they're going to need on-prem installations. We handle all of that.
Nice.
We're comfortable with all of, you know, the big picture enterprise universe. That's where my whole career has been. But it still is going to take some, I think it's going to take us a lot more market education for people to see that this is possible, to understand that it's a thing, that it's doable, that it's easy. I think that, you know, to really scale, we're going to need to get to that next generation of non-tethered glasses, which will be, I'm predicting, you know, 12 to 24 months. That
Whoa,
we'll start
really?
To see that.
Okay.
There's a lot of folks, even with the Meta Ray-Ban display, mm-hmm. oh, that is a waveguide and it's small and it's a single eye and it looks very 2D, but they're giving us access to the cameras. If you can get the access to the camera feed as a developer, you can do some SLAM so that you can do some augmented reality. Mm. I think that we're going to see those kinds of glasses with larger field of view in the waveguide in a way that will be meaningful even for what we're doing pretty quick. All these Chinese manufacturers are all over it, but I think we'll see it from all of our favorite, our American brands too. It's hard, it's expensive, or whatever. You get millions and millions of those Ray-Ban display glasses in the world, and I think they're going to sell millions and millions of them. The use cases are very strong. The more waveguides that are on people's faces, the more the price can come down. And that's where the big challenge with Meta Orion, which is, you know, the biggest waveguide augmented reality glasses I've ever put on. The biggest challenge with that is they say it's $10,000 to make them.
Yeah, it's expensive. So
if price is the issue, then take a look at all of technology since the beginning of humanity and see that price starts to drop, especially when you start to get to large numbers of scale.
What a time to be alive in this world of competition and who can get there first and do it the best. It's funny that when I talk to people like this, I can understand, like, we have the excitement for it, but I can't forget that there's still a segment of the population that every time I hand over my Meta Ray-Bans for them to try out, they're like, oh, why can't I see anything? And I'm like, we're not, that these aren't AR, and that's okay. It's just like,
right.
I do want to help educate the public on terminology that is coming a part of social discourse now that we may not be familiar with, such as emerging tech. So that's something that I think about often.
It's not quite there yet on the AR, certainly the all-day wearable AR glasses. But Google, Samsung, Apple, Meta, and more companies than we know of in China mm-hmm. are spending billions and billions, not just a few billions, tens of billions, sometimes each, in order to solve this problem.
And I wonder, and I ask myself, are we doing the proper research to ask ourselves, what does this look like on the brain over time? I mean,
Bloody Cooper,
I know.
Well, absolutely. But what does it look like on our necks to be looking down at a phone?
Fair. Yeah. Our evolution's going to be like shrimps.
Yeah. I mean, so I would argue, and again, I don't know, AI itself is really brain twisting. So we'll see what happens with that. But I would argue that having a glasses form factor is more human and more humane than any other screen devices we've ever had. And as it's more human and more humane, both more comfortable physically, but also negatively impactful for our human interactions. Looking down at a phone to see data and have a conversation is way different than being able to keep it here and just move your eyes and still really keep your field of view, keep your conversation in the field of view at the same time.
Which is huge in this day and age of loneliness that we use technology to create those deeper connections in ways that are meaningful to us. So I'm excited to see where that goes. And I encourage everyone to be an active participant in that as well and experimenting. Well, Jason, with everything that we've mentioned, where can people go to find more about Flow Immersive and your work and some of the projects that you're doing?
The most obvious place is our website, which is flowimmersive.com, and all one word, flowimmersive.com. And then you can also follow me or connect with me on LinkedIn. If you type in Jason Marsh at Flow, I will come up and happy to chat with you. And there's an inquiry form on the website to send in, and we can start a conversation. Absolutely.
Awesome. I feel like we could have a long conversation about this, but I'm going to keep it short and sweet for everyone listening. But I can't thank you enough for taking time to come on the podcast today and share more about Flow Immersive, the cool work that you're doing with AI, and even the use cases beyond enterprise where you're looking at digital human data. So thank you for coming on Coffee and Code.
My pleasure. Lots of fun, Ashley.
Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll have a part two. I can't wait to see the next iteration. And I'm sure I'll see you at AWE in Long Beach in 2026.
Not before. Thank you.
That's right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Coffee and Code. Your support means everything, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more insights, updates, and behind-the-scenes content. Stay curious, stay informed. Until next time, stay hydrated, and do something nice for someone.